And I also enjoy history, and sort of putting the two together, talking about the history of halakha a little bit is something that I find to be very fascinating. And not only do I think it's interesting in its own right, but I hope that by the end of next week we will have gained some religious value, and really sort of gained some insight into the way we learn and consume halakha. So I hope it'll be enlightening in that sense. I like to start this by using this quote from Leon Modena, who lived in the 16th, 17th century, shortly after the Shulchan Aruch came out. Shulchan Aruch came out in, I believe, early 1500s. And so he said he lived shortly after. So he says that after the printing of the book Shulchan Aruch, my ears heard from an ignoramus, someone beloved to me, peace be upon him, who used to say, "When I have the Shulchan Aruch underneath the joints of my arms, I do not need a single one of you rabbis." So what I like about this quote is that it shows a little bit already shortly after Shulchan Aruch some of the controversy surrounding, in this case, not necessarily about the book itself, but sort of what it led to. On the one hand, perhaps in inappropriate reliance on it, and on the other hand, an undermining of rabbinic authority at large. So we'll see what, of course, Shulchan Aruch accomplishes. It's obviously a main staple today, so it's obviously it's obvious it's at whatever criticism it withstood in its earlier days, it certainly comes out as being one of the most important works of halacha that we have today. And nonetheless, Leon Modena is already showing us some of the drawbacks of people using Shulchan Aruch in an inappropriate way, and related to that, the way that people lost their respect for, perhaps some people would have lost their respect for rabbis afterwards.
Do you know anything about Leon de Modena?
I don't know a whole lot about him. I believe he was a Kabbalist.
He lived
Of
in
sorts.
he was a rabbi in Venice.
Right.
He left a diary. He was a gambler. He
Right.
was
Am I
not
correct about
exactly.
about the Kabbalah?
I don't know.
I think
He was a
so.
genius as a child.
Yeah. Obviously, someone who's writing about an ignoramus was not an ignoramus itself, or maybe not
Was that
so
obvious?
obvious. Not so obvious, I guess.
Not so
But
obvious.
this came to be true. So I think to before we get anywhere near the Shulchan Aruch, I think we have to go back to the very beginning when we were at Har Sinai. We were given a Torah Shebichtav, and according to our Mesorah, we were given a Torah Shebaal Peh also. That came along with that Torah Shebichtav. Torah Shebichtav obviously carved out very important and basic principles for how our religion works, but Hashem chose to not write every single detail in the Torah itself, but it gets passed down orally through tradition. So there are and so they sort of they work together in a certain sense. The importance of the Torah being written down in some sense that gives that sort of formalized standing, and makes it a little more set in stone. And the advantage of the Al-Pep part is that it allows each generation to apply the Torah as it's appropriate. Obviously, even the Torah of Al-Pep, of course, is based on Mesorah, and there are things passed down. But the fact that it was oral originally does sort of, instead of everything being sort of put down, set in stone, there's a recognition that certain things are set in stone and other things have to evolve as time goes on. So the Gemara in Gittin and Tzmura discusses how we went from having a Torah Shebichtav to a Torah Sheba'al Peh to a Torah Sheba'al Peh that was also a Torah Shebichtav. So the Gemara in Gittin says, "Darash Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachman miturgmanei de Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish." Okay, so this is the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. "Ktiv ktov lecha tadvarim ha'ela," write these things down. "Uchtiv ki al pi hadvarim ha'ela." So the notion of al pi makes it sound like that already in the Torah Shebichtav there's a source for the fact that certain things are meant to be oral. So ha'ketzad, how can you have a Torah that's both written and also oral? So Gemara says, Dvarim shebiktav, yatar rashai le'omran alpeh. Dvarim shebalpeh, yatar rashai le'omran biktav. So, famously, things that are written down, you're not allowed to say them by heart. So, you know, among other things, if you, you know, definitely would come to Kriyas HaTorah, you can't just go up and do Kriyas HaTorah from memory. It has to be, it's Torah shebiktav, it has to be written down. And also, likewise, things that are said orally should not be written down. So, in other words, long before there was art scroll or Shulchan Aruch or anything, none of this was supposed to be in a book. It was all supposed to be passed down orally, in a literal sense. We call Torah Shebaal Peh still by that name today, but we don't mean it literally. But it was meant to be literal at the time. So Rabbi Bishmal Tana Ela Takotev VeIya Takotev Halachos. Okay, so when it says Ketov Bechatz Rima Ela, so you write down the things that are in the Torah Shebichtav, but not the Halachos. And Rabbi Yochanan Lo Karas Hakadosh Baruch Hu Bris Mitzrayah Ela Bishvil Dvarim Shebaal Peh. I think an even bolder statement of Rabbi Yochanan that Hashem created the covenant of Bnei Israel only for the sake of the Dvarim Shebaal Peh, and Ma Piat Dvarim Ha'Ela Karati Yitcha Bris Bez Israel. That based on the pasuk says, based on these things, Al Pi. Right, from oral sense, I created this covenant with you and with Israel. So, Torah Shebaal Peh is not just a happenstance that certain things are passed down, but it really has an important place that halacha was based on Torah Shebichtav, and at the same time that as I said, it is meant to be passed down orally. It's meant to sort of have that not crystallized sense to it. Okay, so how did it come to be that then that Torah Shebaal Peh came to be written down? So just in Hebrew, I just gave a very short line from the Gemara Tamura. It says Vedar Sheyachi Is Lasos LaHashem Hefer Torah Safa. It's time to do for Hashem, so we have to avoid your Torah. Arm Remutav Teakir Torah V'Altishtakach Torah Meisrael. So it's better that Torah be a particular law and the Torah be uprooted, then that the entire Torah should be forgotten. So obviously here, this is the idea of halacha and Torah Shebaal Peh being written down is far from the ideal. That's not what God originally envisioned, and that's not even necessarily what Chazal thought was supposed to be the case. But why was it written down? Because at the end of the day, you have to sometimes make compromises in order to see the Torah continue perpetually. Of course, using this pasuk and applying it can be very dangerous, and can, in theory, one could take this pasuk and make all sorts of justifications for doing all sorts of things in the name of preserving the Torah. What?
Plenty do.
Right, but so it obviously has to. So you know, wouldn't walk away with this and with the wrong idea. But clearly, Chazal had felt that this was what needed to be done at that time. So I think that this already sort of foreshadows the tension between the ideal and reality when it's going to come to codes. That that ideally, in the first place, Torah Shebaal Peh was not meant to be written down. So the idea that eventually we'd have codes where things are set, really, that certain codes become very authoritative and that they sort of have almost absolute authority, was not the idea of Torah Shebaal Peh, but we're going to see how it sometimes comes to that for a particular reason out of certain circumstances. Turn to the next page. So before going to Rimigash, one thing I guess just to note about Mishnah and Gemara, of course, so the Mishnah is the first set of halacha that was written down, organized, sort of crystallized. And there, so it does preserve multiple opinions, but on the whole, is pretty it's pretty didactic, very straightforward. The Gemara, of course, becomes written down as well, but the Gemara is very different because Gemara is not as it's not as clear cut. We have, of course, ways of determining what the halacha is from the Gemara, but even the Gemara itself was full of argumentation, not necessarily clear-cut conclusions. So we sort of have that back and forth even with the Mishnah and the Gemara. The Mishnah was very clear-cut, and the Gemara preserve some of that oral nature where the tradition's passed down, but not necessarily set in stone. After the Gemara, one of the first poskim who creates something that we might call a code is the Rif Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, lived in North Africa in the 11th century. So he wrote, he compiled a sefer called the Sefer HaHalachot. The Sefer HaHalachot was not a creative work per se, but it takes the Gemara and takes out the practical parts. So Sefer HaHalachot is not going to be, for the most part, it's not going to deal with kachem, it's not going to deal with sacrifices, but it deals mostly with Moed, Nezikin, and Nashim, where there are halakhos that are relevant, and he cuts down a lot of the shakal entire, a lot of the give and take, and tries to give you the straightforward halakha. And what's interesting is that at a certain point, of course, Gemara, as we know, can be extremely complicated to learn, and certainly back then, before there were any sort of study aids or dictionaries or whatever, Gemara was very challenging. The Rif replaced the Gemara in many yeshivot. They wanted to focus on practical halacha, and they learned from masechtot that were practical, and they used the Rif because the Rif sort of broke it down and made it very, very easy to understand. What the halacha is. So in that sense, Rif is a little bit of a code. Again, not in as creative of a sense as other codes that we'll see, but he has that. Was there any opposition to that? So, while the Rif did become widely authoritative, there were some naysayers, such as the Baal Ma'or, Rabbi Zrachia Halevi, who lived in Provence. And the Baal Ma'or, we're going to see this time and time again, is that when a particular book of halacha comes out of a certain community, so someone from another community will say, well, we have to be careful here because this is not representative of Klal Yisrael. So, among the complaints of the Baal Ma'or was that the Rif is not necessarily reflective of what was the community of Provence and the like. So that already sort of shows some of the tension that on the one hand you can try to create something that's like concise and accessible and the like, and maybe useful for one community, but not necessarily universally accepted or useful. A prized student of the Rif was the Rimigash, Rabbi Yosef Ibn Migash, of course, a Sephardi rabbi, and he's asked a very interesting question. He's asked, "Sheila, Mayomar Donenu Ba'isha Sesor Sfora Ba'isha Lo Karame Olam Halacha Imrav, someone who never learned halacha with a rabbi, Ve'enu Yodea Derech Halacha Ve'lo Pirusha Ve'lo Kriata El Shehura Ahar Ben Mitshuvot Ageonim V'Sifrei Dinim." So, person who never really learned so much in yeshiva, didn't have a rabbi, and he doesn't really know the Gemara, but he's literate enough to have read some of the tshuvas of the Geonim. Okay, v'im ish ikar yidiato b'tshuvato b'tshuvot eila ve'eno mevin hatzedek mehem mebilti hatzedek im yuchal lo ro be'inyan echad nidon echad v'yuksa kadin bo. So can this person who doesn't necessarily know a lot but is able to read the tshuvas of the Geonim, is he allowed to paskin from the tshuvas of the Geonim? Is he allowed to go around and tell people this is what the Geonim said and that's the halacha? So what's the problem with that? Well, maybe even though a particular tshuva of the Gaon might have been publicized, maybe the Gaon took it back. So the question is, if this person doesn't, A, you don't know if the original halachic authority took his ruling back, but especially if you don't really understand what the root of the halacha is and where it comes from the Gemara, so you're missing some nuances. So maybe this person shouldn't be reliable to paskin halacha, and that could be a very big issue with the codes, because if you're getting a very concise rendering of the halacha, so you don't necessarily understand where it comes from. So without having the full picture, you don't necessarily know exactly how to apply it properly. Okay, so even though we're dealing here particularly with tshuvot, I think it's relevant in a certain sense for the question of codes. So the Rimigash says, "Dasha ish hazeh ra'u yoter lahatir lo lahor me'anashim rabim kavu atzmam lahor rab izmanenu zeh. Berobam ein bahem afilu echad mishnei dvarim elo retzinu lomar havanan halacha ve'hamid al das hagonim zichronam livracha." So the Rimigash says, I think what's the reason why this, in some ways, Chuva gets a lot of attention is because he says something that seems a little bit counterintuitive. You were expecting, because the way the questioner sets up the question is that, well, maybe this is really not a good idea, but I want you to confirm that for me. And Yubikashi says, actually, contrary to what you might think, this person is better qualified to paskin than many people who consider themselves qualified to paskin. Because well, so he's going to explain. But otam shemedamim lahoro meiun halacha mechuzak iunam betamur hem sheroi lamanam mized fisha aim is my name is that misha yeh roi lekaf velo misha giach lechok mas atamul leklal sheyera meiunam biblishi amor al datzake onimzak. So these people, you know, they've learned a lot of Gemara, but these are the people you should prevent from learning Gemara. Because so the people who are passing from the Chuvos of the Geonim, so at least they understand what the actual bottom line halacha is, and they're applying something that's already been decided. But if you're someone who's learning Gemara and you're trying to apply it on your own sort of intuition, so maybe you don't actually know what you're doing. Because the person is passing him truths from the Geonim is relying on truths are reliable. So Rimigash says, I actually have seen some tshuvas of people who thought they paskin correctly, and it's clear as day that they paskin incorrectly. They don't know what they're doing. They learn one gemara and that applies, but really they looked in the wrong gemara. So these individuals, they pass in halacha from the Gemara, but they don't. But not only do they not necessarily know what they're doing, they don't have the right. They don't necessarily have the right Gemaras open, but they also, even in their analysis. So they're not necessarily understanding the fine distinctions between what might be brought forth from the Gemara and how it's actually applied. I think you could say that about the Tshuvas also. It might be even more applicable in some ways. If you're passing from something that was meant for a particular situation, so anytime you have that situation, so you might not be applying it appropriately. But the Rimigash thinks that at least with the Tshuvas of the Geonim, so they're more reliable than someone who's trying to fish their way through the sea of the Gemara and might not pass them correctly. Okay, so that's the Rimigash's take on Gemara versus codes is that you can't just rely on Gemara and try to pass them the question each time, especially when you have a lot of people who aren't qualified. Sometimes it's better to rely on something that's already been figured out. This approach to Rimigash was not the approach of Baalei Tosfos. I didn't bring anything from Baalei Tosfos on the sources, but I'll just go through certain insights that I got from Ephraim Orbach, who's the author of a two-volume work called Baalei Tosfos. The whole thing is just discussing the different Baalei Tosfos and their various works and the like. So of course the Tosfos that we're often familiar with are the ones in the Gemara. They were compiled, of course, over a couple of centuries, different personalities. What Tosfos sort of contributes to the Gemara, instead of just looking at each line of Gemara at a time, it tries to take a full scope, full look at Shas, and tries to compare Sugyot and tries to analyze it, especially when they're looking at Rashi. So they analyze how Rashi fits with Gemara. In analyzing Gemaras at large. So Tosfos is not really, it's not necessarily a halachic work per se, but at times they do address halachic issues, especially when they when there's an issue reconciling the Gemara with common practice, but even that, when you learn a sugya from the Gemara through its poskim. So you have to see how Tosfos understood the sugya, and sometimes their halakhic opinion is clear. And that said, particularly with the German Balya Tosfos, we do have some psakim. So for example, there's a book called the Sefer Truma by Rabbi Baruch Ben Yitzchak, who was from Worms. So he wrote summaries of Piskei Halacha with, he brought some rayas, he brought some proofs, and it was very direct and clear. So even when you have, even though we're in some ways familiar with the Tosfos on the Daf, that's not necessarily clear-cut Halacha. So Sefer Truma is one example of a book like that. We also have the works of the Rabbi Eliezer ben Yoel Halevi. He goes more in order of Shas, right, which is going to be different than a lot of codes. The Rif was in order of Shas, but a lot of the later codes are not. There's also a Sefer called the Sefer Rokeach, which was specifically not meant for scholars, but was meant for the average Jew to know what the bottom line halacha is with the reasoning. And then you also another just a final famous work of one of the Balya Tosfos is the Sefer Or Zeruah, which has a collection of the opinions of many of the Balya Tosfos compiled, and it's divided into different sections of Halacha. And he preserves minhagim of different communities. So we already have in the time of Tosfot before Shulchan Aruch or the like. I guess probably some of these come out around the same time as the Rambam or a little later. But even though they're a little less known, the Balya Tosfot did compile halachic digests. One thing that Orbach points out that I think is instructive is that the difference between this and some of the other codes that are perhaps more famous is that the goal of these works were not necessarily codification per se. The goal was not to create a universal halacha, and for this to supplant the Gemara, which Rama wants to do, for example. But it was meant to just sort of be sort of a compendium. You could see the opinions of the Balya Tosfot and some sort of clarity, but it wasn't part of necessarily a larger project in the way some of the other codes are. So with that, I want to go to the Rambam, Maimonides, who lived in the 12th century. And the Rambam, famous for many works, but one of his most famous, his magnum opus, perhaps you might call it, is the Mishneh Torah. And his introduction is very fascinating. He describes his motives for writing the Mishneh Torah. Scholars try to go deeper into his motives, but he lays out, at least on the surface, what some of his motives are. He says, "Uzman is a takwa tsaros yiteros v'dakka shah esakov v'avda chokmas chokmenu v'inas nevonenu nistara." So he's noting that we're living in exile, right? Think back already to the Mishnah and what we discussed in the Gemara's justification for bringing down the Mishnah. Again, exile is a big issue, and we don't have a lot of our wisdom. We just don't know things the way people used to know them. Only a small number of people, even the Chuvas of the Geronim, which Rimi Gash said that are very reliable, just a couple of generations later, the Rambam saying that some of these, are very difficult to understand. And the Chuvas of the Geronim are difficult to understand. The Talmud itself, of course, is very, very difficult to understand. You need a lot of time in order to learn it, in order to conclude anything from it, and you need to have a lot of patience to learn it. Moshe ben Maimon Asfaradim Nishanti al Tzur Baruch Hu. I relied on God, Uvinosi v'chol Eil Asfarim, and I relied on God and my understanding of these books. Were Isil Chaber Dvarim Hamisparim Mikol Eil Chiborim BeInyan HaAsar VeMutar Tamei Atari Im Shar Dinei Torah. So he wants to write a book where he's going to lay out all the things, whether they're permitted, forbidden, Tamei Tahor. He's going to lay it all out for everybody. Kulan Belashon Brura V'Derech Tzara. He's going to write it clearly and concisely. Achetei Torah Shabal Pe Kulas Dura B'Fi Kol Blo Kushev Lo Peres. Going to be very clear, easy to understand, we're going to have no problems. Okay, so then he goes on a little more. He says, "Klal shadavar k'deshalei ha'adam tzarech chibur acher ba'olam b'din medina Yisrael ha'lehi chibur zem ekabel etor shav'al pe'kula min takanos min hagos v'egzeros shenasem min Moshe Rabbeinu v'ad chibur gemara Moshe Pirshu Lanaga Oni Michol Chiburehem Shechibur Achar HaGemara. So he says the basic idea here is that you won't need any other. I mean, you'll need the Torah Shebichtav, obviously, but you have the Torah Shebichtav and you have my book. That's all you need. I'm going to lay it all out. I'm going to include all up until his time, obviously, all the different customs and decrees. Everything will be in there from Moshe Rabbeinu until through the Gemara and even through the Gaonim. The Fichach Karasi Shema Chibur Zeh Mishneh Torah. Okay, Mishneh Torah, of course, can mean two things. Right? It can mean like a repeating of the Torah, which is apt here. It could also mean a second Torah, because this is you have Torah Shebichtav and you have the Mishneh Torah. That's it. Afisha Adam Kore b'Torah Shebichtav Tchil v'Chakach Kore b'Zeh. You read Torah Shebichtav and then you'll read Zeh. V'Yodea Mimen Torah Shebapeh Kula v'Ein Tzarich L'Kos Sefer Achar B'Neim. That's all you need. Of course, before he even finishes his sentence, the Rambam had a famous interlocutor named the Ravid. Rabbi Avram ben David, he lived in Provence, and the Ravid immediately jumps at him and says, "Savar l'takan v'lo tikan." He thought he was doing the Jewish world a favor, and he totally missed the mark. He was av derech kol mechari masher yu lefaneinu lefanav yehem heviu rai l'divrehem. How did it used to be? Okay, when you had, certainly in times of the Gemara, right, you had multiple opinions, and you had to bring proofs, and you had to argue back and forth. Okay, that's a big difference between the Mishnah and Gemara. So do you hear, right? Before you had the Mishnah Torah, okay, so people would write tshuvas and they would argue, they would bring proofs to their ideas. The kasva dvarim b'shem omram, and they would cite who they're talking about. V'hai lo b'zeh toas gadol, kipamim rabos yaleh alef ha'adayon lesor lahatev v'raisam makom echav, ilu yada ki yesh gadol mimenu, hiflik shmuas alodas acheres haya chozer bo. Okay, so what does the Rambam says? I'm doing everyone a big favor. I'm writing this very concise book. I'm going to write everything straightforward. One opinion, very clear and concise. But the Ravid says we have a big problem because it's not useful, because he doesn't cite his sources, which of course today you couldn't get away with. But back then it wasn't rule per se that you had to cite your sources. But the advantage of citing your sources is that someone can go back and understand where you got it from, and maybe even disagree with you if it's appropriate. And the Rambam didn't do it, and he didn't bring any proofs. So it's a very difficult book. So I guess a couple of notes here. Number one, the idea that the Rambam literally thought that nobody would ever read another book. Some say he meant it literally. Some say he didn't necessarily mean it entirely literally. But in theory. You could, he definitely meant that you could understand all Torah Shebaal Peh, without the Gemara through reading his book, but not necessarily that no scholar would ever learn the Gemara again. I don't think he meant to entirely replace the Gemara. So that's one point. And so what's interesting, so the Ravid, of course, brings out these points which are very apt in terms of the criticism of codes, that they're too concise and they sort of skirt the shakla and tire that's appropriate in halacha to really argue your point, as opposed to saying that this is the halacha and that's the end of the day. That's just not how it used to work, and that's how it's supposed to work. So the Ravid, the Rambam in some ways won, because many people in the Taimanid community to this day relies on the Rambam, and the Rambam is the source of many halachas in the Shulchan Aruch. So the Rambam in some sense won, but the Ravid's criticisms resurface in many situations. Do we have any questions up till this point? Yeah.
When you keep saying the word codes, how do you define the word codes?
It's a fair question. So a code is a book of law that, I guess the way I would define it is that it's very prescriptive in terms of what the law is. So the Gemara, for example, even though Gemara discusses halacha, it's not a code because it's not necessarily prescribing X, Y, and Z. Whereas a code, I think in American law also, code will be very straightforward. It's just like it's a list of rules and how they. So that's true with halacha also.
Any sefer of halacha would be under your umbrella of the word code?
Any sefer of halacha that's meant to very concisely just say exactly what to do, right? So your sefer halacha that doesn't, sefer halacha that's not as conclusive or has maybe more discussion is not necessary code, but I don't know if like a digest per se, like digest might be a little too on the end, but a code is very sort of concrete and concise in terms of how to do it.
Yeah, code is systematically organized.
And that's also true. Code is systematically organized. We have about 10 minutes left, so I'll just explain quickly. So in terms of, so another major code that comes out after the Rambam is the Torah, Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher. His father was the Rosh, who's one of the Baalei Tosfot, and he also, you know, is interesting in terms of how he, on the one hand, edited a set of the thoughts and chidushim of the Baalei Tosfot. On the other hand, the Rosh did have some more straightforward halacha, but not necessarily code in the most straightforward sense of the word. But Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher writes a code. And what's interesting about him is that he grew up in Ashkenaz, and his family fled Ashkenaz and went to Sfarad. So he has a very broad sense of what the different halachas were in the different communities. And the Torah also, similar to the Rambam and similar to the Mishnah, also talks about how Galus has overtaken the Jewish people, and people don't have the energy to learn as well. Certainly, in the case of his father had to, and his family fled Germany, so if you're on the run, it's obviously much harder to learn. So between the difficulties of learning in exile and just the fact that we're dispersed so much and communities have become so decentralized, and there's many different opinions emerging in different places, so halacha is just it's hefker. It's not organized, and it's not clear enough, and it's difficult to navigate. So the Torah decides he's going to write a code, and he says, I'm not going to elaborate so much. So one thing that the Torah does different than the Rambam is that the Torah will bring different opinions. At the end, he says he'll write the opinion of his father, the Rosh, which he does, in fact, do frequently, and brings the opinion of his father, but the Torah elaborates on things a little more, and he brings different opinions. I'm not aware of any criticism of the Torah per se, but the Torah writes his code. One way where he's different than the Rambam is the Rambam wrote on the entire Torah Sheba'al Peh, so even things that aren't applicable nowadays, the Rambam writes about. The Torah organizes everything in four sections, and they're all essentially what we would call practical halacha, and he does things in a certain chronological order that's not necessarily the same as the Rambam. Or Chaim, he's the originator of those four sections. Or Chaim, Yoredei, Chosh, Mishpat, and the Mishnah Berurah is only on Or Chaim, but the Torah is the origin. The Yoredei, Chosh, Mishpat, and Avnei Ezra, the Torah is the originator of that classification. The Shulchan Aruch just goes when. They're not the same. So the Torah is a part of the Shulchan Aruch. So we'll see how the Torah impacts the Shulchan Aruch. But yeah.
When we started the discussion, it had to do something with printing, because before they had scrolls, and then when you had printing, then you could have more people see. But was any of the codes done before printing?
Yeah. So the Rambam and the Torah were before printing. The Rif was before printing. Beis Yosef might have been before printing. I think the Shulchan Aruch.
So it was less
available. Right, but even so, it had some sort of utility in terms of making the halacha precise. Okay, so I'm running a little short on time, but let's I guess quickly discuss the Beis Yosef and Darkei Moshe, and maybe we'll continue next week with the Shulchan Aruch if we run out of time. So we have Rabbi Yosef Karo. He's the author of Shulchan Aruch, but before the Shulchan Aruch, he wrote the Beit Yosef. He was born in Spain and ended up in Tzfat. And the Beit Yosef has some concerns. Just like the Torah and the Rambam beforehand, he's concerned that we've been thrown around in exile, and we've lost a lot of Torah learning. It's difficult to learn Torah. And if you want to pass an halacha, it's very difficult, because at this point, by the time Beit Yosef comes around, you already have a great number of works that have been printed. So not only, if you want to understand the halacha, not only do you have to look it up in the Gemara, which itself is difficult, but then you have to learn all the Rishonim, you have to learn all the Rishonim and put it together and analyze and figure and then figure out who to decide according to, and it's gotten very complicated. And the Beis Yosef is very concerned about this. On the other hand, the Beis Yosef is where we see it. So he ends up commenting on the Torah. I'll get there in a second. On one hand, the Beis Yosef thought that there's too much on the, out there. On the other hand, there was a concise work called the Ugger, which was sort of a compilation, but it was very, very, very concise. And Beis Yosef thought that that was too short. So what the Beis Yosef essentially does is he creates an encyclopedia of halacha from the Gemara through Rishonim. He summarizes them, and he explains how he has a way of deciding, from the Beis Yosef, you can understand sort of who he's going to paskin by. I mean, sometimes he'll say explicitly, but his general rule is that if you have the three most authoritative individuals up until that point were the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam, okay, two and a half of those are Sephardi, take note. So whoever the majority is according to, if the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam all have an opinion, so whichever two out of three agree, that's how the halacha is going to be. Okay, he felt like, because he felt like, you know, who are we to judge when we have giants that came before us? These three works were already authoritative at that point. So that's what Beis Yosef does. So he does. So in this sense, the Beis Yosef is not a code, right? Because it's a compendium of different halachic opinions. He is interested in sort of the final line of halacha, but it's much more expansive than a code would be. Comes the Rama. I summarize this in source 8. The Rama was a young rabbi in Krakow, Rabbi Moshe Isserlis, young rabbi in Krakow, and he lived around the same time as the Beit Yosef, and he was appointed the rabbi of Krakow at a young age, and he was getting asked a lot of shilas, and he realized that he needed to create some sort of system that he could just look up the halacha instead of having to delve in each time. So he thought he was going to write a sort of encyclopedia of halacha and sort of a handbook for himself. Then he realizes that the Beis Yosef was doing that already, and he almost had a meltdown because he was already sort of making progress with this work. And he realizes that there's actually going to, he saw the Beit Yosef and decided that there's going to be work, there's going to, that his work was not entirely in vain. And his three problems are as follows. Number one, it's too long. The Beit Yosef was a little too long. And sometimes you don't have the time to learn everything in that much depth. So even though the Beis Yosef was trying to make it somewhat easier, he didn't make it easy enough. But on the other hand, the Beis Yosef left some stuff out because there were certain books that come out, especially in the Ashkenazi world, that the Beis Yosef never saw. So therefore he felt like he needed, the Rama needed to include that in order that those be included. And sort of along those lines, a third problem is that there's a halakhic principle that halakha kebatrai. The halakha is according to later opinion, so if you're only relying on the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam, so you're not considering the later Rishonim. Okay, and in that vein, you also consider the communal custom. So if you're an Ashkenazi reading the Beit Yosef, you're not seeing the latest Ashkenazi works, and it's not reliable. So for all these reasons, the Darkei Moshe decides that he's going to write a companion to the Beis Yosef. So what we basically have at this point is you have the tour, which is interesting, is that even though in theory the Rambam would have been a great work for Beis Yosef to be based on, he chooses to use the tour because the tour already wrote out some of the opinions, and it was more practical. So it was much easier for him to work off of. So you have the tour, and Beis Yosef's commentary around it, filling in whatever the tour didn't talk about. Darkei Moshe giving the Ashkenazi opinion. So there you have the Shulchan. Right. So and it's all sort of like a
familiar with us, so we're not sitting around the tour.
Right. Right. So even to this day when Smicha students learn halacha, so they often they learn the Torah in Beis Yosef and Darkei Moshe to really get a sense of all the Rishonim. So I was planning on finishing the Shulchan Aruch, what happens with the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama post the Beis Yosef, but we'll do that. I will do that next week, and then we'll see some of the reactions to the Shulchan Aruch itself and where that leads us today in terms of halakhic books. Thank you all for coming.